The wheel of time turns and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. Legend fades to myth, and even myth is long forgotten when the age that gave it birth comes again. Welcome to Adventures in Randland. I'm Andy.
And I'm Wendy.
And today we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We'll be talking about chapters 9 through 14 of Robert Jordan's Eye of the World. Before I get into it, one little thing, Wendy, and I'll probably edit this out. It is what it is. But As I was playing the last episode, there was one point where my dog, Zero, came in and started barking right next to me.
Yeah.
Well, as I was replaying it, he starts barking on the recording, and he comes running from it out inside to see where the barking dog was, and I thought that was very funny. So, it's like, yep, nope, that was you, bud. my special dog. He's special.
Oh, he's special. Gotta love the special dogs.
Aren't you special? You gotta come up and join us. All right. So, chapter 9 is where we will start, titled Tellings of the Wheel. So Rand dreams about being chased by Trollocs into Tar Valon, and he wakes up to see that Tam is awake. He tells Tam basically what Tam had missed, that Moraine's an Aes Sedai, and she says he needs to leave the Two Rivers with her, and Tam tells her, basically gives him his blessing and says, just be careful around her. The truth to an Aes Sedai is not necessarily what they say it is. And Lan shows up and tells Rand they need to go, and as they're leaving the inn, Moraine is cornered by a group of villagers and silences him by telling them the story of Manethrin. And then after the story, the crowd apologizes, breaks up, and our group heads to the stables to meet Perrin.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts on chapter 9?
It seemed like through Rand's dream that someone was talking to him. Like, it was almost like someone was trying to reach up to almost like, I don't know if it was scare him into his side or, you know, what.
Right. Definitely seems like more than just a dream.
Yeah, it was definitely more than a dream. It was like someone was like trying to talk to him. And I was almost wondering if it was the big bad guy that got locked in the...
The dark one, the Shaitan.
Yeah. And that was some way of how he could...
It's a good call. We'll put a little mark in that and probably come back to it at some point here. I like
it. And then the second thing was when Moraine was telling the story to the villagers to kind of calm them down.
Before you get into that, I have to tell you that I think I've mentioned this before, but this speech by Moraine is one of my favorite parts of the entire series. I love this speech. So,
with her story. Yeah.
I love it. She has two big speeches in this whole series. This is one of them, and I love them both. I think they're both fantastic.
It was amazing, and it was funny because, it told more of like the great battle.
Right.
And, you know, kind of how Two Rivers was formed. And I was wondering if that's almost one of the reasons why she was looking for stories, to see if anyone remembered or spoke about those stories.
Nice pickup. I think you're absolutely right.
You know, because that's, you know, she's trying to remind them that they were part of a war once before. And that they can't just hide there and wait for, you know, in hope it's going to pass them by.
So essentially she goes back to the land of ancient Manethrin and finds a people who don't remember that they were Manethrin.
Exactly.
So, I mean, even their town, in her story, the king, I forgot his name, king, it was something along the lines of Emon.
Emon.
Yeah, and their town is actually named after that king. I mean, it's Emon's Field is where they live.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, which is strange too. And I didn't catch that part because, you know, the Emon was different. But, you know, how he led his people, you know, and he was told that there was going to be backup, but no backup came. And they did the impossible. And they kept, you know, kept the Trollocs from coming. And then they had a retreat. And
if you can hold them for 3 days, we'll meet you there. Yeah. And then 3 days becomes four, and then seven, then nine. Yeah. Kind of love that story.
You know, all kept holding off. And then when they retreated, you know, he did his best so they wouldn't be followed by, like, destroying the bridge.
Right.
And I think that comes up later. You know, after reading a couple chapters, I think that'll pop up.
Okay.
That bridge being gone.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong.
The at Terran's Ferry?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
You know, I've never put those two together, but I think that's a good call. I don't think it's random that you have the bridges being destroyed in her story and then the ferry being destroyed as they're escaping. Nice.
Yeah.
I agree.
So
I like it.
You know, and then when he dies, that his wife, Eldrin, reached the one true source to hurl the power at the Trolloc army. Like, completely destroying them and showing how one woman, like, just wiped them out, but it also destroyed her.
You don't have a way of really knowing this yet, and I'm not really telling you anything that matters, but the amount of power that she must have drawn in to be able to do that, I mean, that's a fantastic amount of power. That's not normal channelers are not that strong. Like, she must have been super strong.
Exactly. And she just inspired everybody that they went out and they just hunted down and killed everyone who had killed their people before.
Yes.
The women went into battle. Children went into battle. Everyone went into battle. And they went after the Trollocs and, like, just eviscerated anyone who had killed their loved ones and whatnot and just, like, just sent them all away. And then they ended up, you know, that's how kind of like Amonsfield came to be.
Right, exactly.
Because they just had to leave, you know, that destruction.
From the sounds of Moraine's story, Manethrin was basically the stronghold of the light side against the dark. You know, I mean, they were a thorn in the Dark One's foot, I think is how she put it. So, I love that story. Like I said, I'm just going to say that about 10 times. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was a story. I mean, it was like 5 or 6 pages long.
Yeah, no, it was a great story, but it really, you know, people just, like, apologized to her afterwards because it just really brought home that they were wrong.
Right. They're like, oh, my bad. Sorry about that. I just picture that when they're apologizing. I can't come up with a specific movie right now, but I've seen it 100 times in movies and TV shows where everybody's stepping up, you know, causing problems, and then everybody steps back except for that one person. Who's just left up front. That's kind of how I picture that. Just like, oh, sorry. And then there's that one guy who's like, oh, everybody moved. Now I look like the jerk.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
All right. Anything else with chapter 9?
That's about it.
I agree. I love that chapter. I love that story. Chapter 10, titled Leave Taking. So we get to the stables and Matt, Perrin, and Rand talk about, and they kind of poke fun at each other's weapons. Perrin has his axe, Matt has a bow and arrow, and Rand has Tam's sword. And as they're about to leave, Aang just pops up and says, well, you're not leaving without me. I'm coming too. Yeah, you laugh because that's her personality. We've already even established a bit of that, haven't we?
Yeah, I think I even said that she wasn't going to let the
girl you did. Her. That was a very good call. And she kind of talks about how she knew they were leaving, you know, that Matt and Perrin were trying to skulk around, but they were skulking around like a couple of cows or something along those lines.
Just shows her power of observation.
Absolutely. So Lan tells her, you know what, you can just take the, well, Moraine says, well, yeah, she's part of the pattern. She's coming with us. And Lan says, well, you can take the Gleeman's horse then. And Tom pops out of the hayloft. Says, nope, that's not going to be possible. I'm coming too. parents like, well, I didn't check the hay loft. Sorry about that. Right, exactly. So they sneak out of Emmons Field. They pause to let the newly created watch pass. And then they reach the North Road where Rand sees a drag car flying. And Land names it, and Tom kind of explains what it is. And then they continue at a much faster pace after that.
Yeah.
So your thoughts on chapter 10?
Well, I thought it was really interesting about Perrin's axe, because it was funny because the axe was originally made for someone else. And Master Llewelyn had made it for someone else, but they didn't pay for the price that was agreed upon. And that kind of almost reminded me of this bigger man from Princess Bride.
That's awesome. Love that movie and love that book, too. Yeah, I can see that.
But, you know, but it was like Perrin was drawn to this, to the axe, and he's like, you might as well have it here. No one else is going to use it. And
it seems like it's a very nice axe, too. I mean,
yeah, and it's not made for chopping wood. It's
right.
It's a battle axe. It's definitely a battle axe.
Yeah, I don't know if ornate's the right word for it, because it does. I mean, this is still a small town, but for this area, it definitely seems ornate. It seems like it's fancy.
It's over the top.
Right.
Because it was a curved blade. It wasn't made for chopping wood or anything like that. It was a battle axe.
Right.
That was made. You know, and that someone would come to ask Master Llewelyn to make a battle axe and then not agree to the sum, you know. It's weird, which it just struck me as weird, and that's why it stuck in my head,
so,
I think.
So what are your thoughts on the fact that Rand has Tam's fancy sword, and Perrin has this, you know, fairly fancy axe, and then Matt just has his bow and arrow?
Well, I think that, you know, even Lan said that bow and arrow is a wicked weapon, if used correctly. Like, they're all very specialized weapons.
Right. But
and
it just seems to me that Matt almost, I don't know if I'm going to say this wrong. It's not that he's not taking it as seriously, but, I mean, Perrin and Rand have these fancy weapons, and Matt's just like, well, I have my bow and arrow. It's not like I came unprepared, but.
Yeah, but that's all, but Matt's been using his bow and arrow forever.
Right.
Too. So he's been playing with it, you know. Rand hasn't, you know.
Matt's definitely more prepared with his weapon, or better with his weapon, than either of the other two are with theirs. That's for sure.
Right, right. And then, you know, with Egwene coming, and, you know, how
I love Egwene.
Saying, it's all about the pattern, you know. But Egwene, that was all foreshadowed before, because she was always, like, looking, observing, and gathering things, and she always wanted to leave the town.
Right.
So she's like, first hit of leaving town, she's like, yep, I'm all for it. And the thing is that I think Tom knows a heck of a lot more than he's let on, because you know, he was hiding out and said, you know, that he wanted to go along. But also when he could name what the drag car was and
right.
And could name it, and that kind of surprised Moraine. So
to be fair though, his job as a gleeman, what he does is he tells stories. So he probably has stories that have Trollocs and Murdral and drag cars in them and things like that. But he
also has a lot more information, too. And what I thought,
right.
The other thing that got me was how he mentioned that Trollocs and wolves or dogs don't get along.
Yes, that is interesting. And when Lan brings up, he says, I wish something along the lines of, I wish we could hear Trollocs howling and Perrin, yeah. I believe. It's like, wolves, why would you want to hear that? No, it's like, well, Trollocs and wolves hate each other. And if we heard wolves howling, we would know that the Trollocs weren't right around the corner.
Yeah, exactly. And then I thought it was also funny that Moraine's speech in the previous chapter actually inspired the town to have a patrol.
Yeah, to man up, basically. I mean, quickly. I mean, they already have a patrol going as they're leaving. I mean,
told to be secretive about leaving, and Matt and Perrin left notes, and Lan was kind of upset when Rand said that he told his dad.
So do you think that says anything maybe about Rand's personality? The fact that he is the one who kind of defied the Aes Sedai and said, you know what, I'm going to verbally tell my dad about it and to tell him about the Aes Sedai and to, you know.
Yeah, there's definitely more to Rand that's coming on because, like you said, in his dream, like someone's already reaching out to him. They think there's much more. Rand is, we're going to find out more about Rand and who he really is.
I like it. All right. Anything else with Chapter 10?
Yeah.
All right. I thought it was interesting. One last thing, that Rand's the one who saw the drag car as well. That he was just kind of like daydreaming, if you will. And he looks up and he's like, is that a bat? No, there's no way that could be a bat.
Exactly. Yeah. He saw it first and he told, but he did speak up. Whereas usually he doesn't speak up.
Right.
He's now learning that he has to speak up about certain things.
Oh, absolutely. And him speaking up actually probably, it helped them because it made Lan realize that they couldn't just skulk. They had to go.
Yeah.
So. All right. Chapter 11, The Road to Terran Ferry. So they're racing towards Terran Ferry, and Rand worries about Bella falling behind and determines that if that happens, then he's going to stay back with Egwene and make the whole party either leave them behind or wait up for them. They get to Watch Hill, and Lan stops them, and they're celebrating Beltane there at Watch Hill. I mean, it looks like nothing happened. There were no Trollocs at Watch Hill, which is interesting because that's basically a neighbor town. You know, I mean, it's one of the four towns of the Two Rivers area, so... And then they hear the Dread Car streak again, and Moraine kind of, I don't know, heals isn't the right word for the horses, but she, like, gets rid of their weariness, makes it so they can keep running even though they're tired. And she finds it surprising that Bella seems like the least tired of them all. She brings that up with Rand. She said something along the lines of, I guess you were right about that horse of yours, because it's... she's keeping up, and she seems less tired than the rest of them. So, they're surrounded by a strange fog, and they ride on through it for a couple hours, and they finally reach Terran Ferry. Lan picks out a house and bangs on the door until Master Hightower, their ferryman, opens the door, and Lan just keeps giving him gold until he agrees to ferry him across the river. I believe that's the River Terran. And he tells him to wait at the ferry as he gets his ferryman together. So,
yeah.
Your thoughts on Chapter 11?
One thing is that how Moraine was, you know, seemed like that they got to Watch Hill pretty quickly.
I agree.
Then when they got to Terran Ferry, they got there very quickly. So I'm starting to wonder if Moraine's kind of doing more than just hiding them with the fog. She was bending time, like making them go faster. Because even Rand noted that how fast they were going.
Well, I do think, how do I put this? I don't know that she's necessarily bending time. But I think with her, like, taking the weariness away from the horses and things like that, she's helping them. Like normally a horse can only run at full speed for short bursts, and I think she's allowing the horses to run at full speed for much longer, for longer stretches. Right. So
yeah, because it seemed like they were kind of surprised at how quickly they got to Terran Ferry, or ran once.
They also kind of mentioned, the boys mentioned that they are not used to, like, they know how to ride horses, but they don't generally ride horses all that often.
Right.
So if they're used to, you know, they'd normally be walking it. Well, maybe it takes, you know, a few days to get there on foot, but a few hours to get there on horse. You know, I mean. But yeah, I agree. Yeah.
But and then what I thought was also strange, or not strange, it stuck out to me, is that how when the Dracar found them at Watch Hill, how Rand wasn't aware that he kind of stood and he had his arm in the air and it was like he was ready to fight the Dracar.
Right.
And, you know, it was like a natural reflex.
Probably wouldn't have been a good idea.
Yeah, which, you know, which is like, wait a second, this is a farm boy, you know?
Right.
And he's like standing ready and he's never had a real sword. He's never done anything.
And he feels like an idiot when he realizes what he's done.
Yeah, and he's like, I hope they didn't see that, you know? And then I think the Moraine made magic fog to hide them from the Dracar because the Dracar couldn't head a track by seeing them.
Absolutely correct.
You know, so...
We learn more about Dracar later in the series. I'm not going to go into details about what their, I don't know, this is probably the wrong word for it, but what their powers are. Like each group of Darkspawn, however you want to say it, like Trollocs have their own special. Trollocs are big, strong, tough. Urdral are not big like Trollocs, but they're kind of like the Trollocs masters. They lead. They're like the captains, where the Trollocs are like the grunts in the army. And
the Dracars, aren't they like the trackers? They're more like the trackers.
Yeah, they are. And there's more to all of them than what we know right now. But we learn that later, and I'm not going to get into that right now. So.
Yeah.
Like I said last week, it's more fun to find it on your own than it is for me to start giving stuff away. So,
yeah. And then the one thing that also, when they were talking about Terran Fury, I just thought it was really strange that Rand's like, those people are tricky. They're sly. They're like, can't trust those people, you know, before Lan ever, you know, gave the fairy money his buddy, you know, because, you know, he was saying, oh, you got to watch out for them. If you shake their hand, count your fingers, you know.
Exactly. It's just kind of funny because growing up, I don't know. Like, I lived in a little town in Kansas called Lenexa, and we would have said the same thing about people from Leawood. You know, another little town near us is, hey, you know, you got to watch yourself around them. All they care about is, you know, collecting money, and they'll steal it from you if you don't watch it, et cetera, you know?
Well, it seems also like what you would say if you were from a small town and anyone from a bigger town.
Right, exactly.
You watch out for them. And then, but this is where I also thought that the Terran Ferry, like, this is where the bridge was torn down. So that's why there's a ferry there then.
Okay. Right.
Down and never been built.
Yep. I like it. All right. Anything else about chapter 11?
No.
No, there really wasn't a whole lot else there. I agree.
Okay.
Moving on. Chapter 12. Chapter 12 is titled Across the Terran. So the party follows Lan to the ferry landing, and Lan has the boys uncover their weapons to avoid the possibility that they'll face a fight. They arrive on the other side of the River Terran, where Lan pays the second half of gold to Hightower. A mysterious whirlpool sinks the ferry, and Lan gives Hightower more gold to compensate for that. Tom questions Moraine's use of the fog. Matt questions her about the whirlpool, and Moraine just kind of snaps at him. He's like, listen, I can't tell you every move that I'm going to make, because that's all we'll do is talk about what I'm doing. Just trust me, leave me alone. So they reach a wooded area and they stop for the night. And I'm going to combine all characters into one name, I guess. Moraine takes Egwene aside to talk to her. And she gives Egwene a quick starter course on the One Power and tells Egwene that she can channel as well. And they do some beginner channeling exercises. And after Egwene states that perhaps Moraine is wrong about her when she can only make the little flicker, Moraine tells her that most women can't even do that much unless they've had months of training. So you kind of get the idea that Egwene is kind of a bigger deal. Yeah, bigger deal than she seems to think she is. So your thoughts on chapter 12?
When they were getting ready to cross the Terran, they were like showing their weapons or whatever. And all of a sudden, Tom had a weapon that seemed to come out of thin air.
Yeah, a little a knife.
I think he's a little bit of a magician.
He clearly is.
And, you know, but, you know.
But I understand where you're coming from, but both Moraine and Egwene reacted when he did that with, they weren't like, oh my God, watch out. They were just like, oh wow, that was so awesome. Let's clap for him, you know? And
right.
So, but yes, there definitely seems to be more to Tom than just this simple little gleam. There's no question.
Yeah. And then again, Lan was warning them not to talk about or saying too much.
Right.
Because it didn't look like the ferryman to like hear too much.
Lan seems to be like, oh God, we got these bumpkins coming along with us, and oh, this sucks. You know, I mean, I just think Lan is funny to me. He just seems like, Moraine's like, well, no, they have to come with us. And Lan's like, do they really? Come on.
Yeah.
So.
And what I thought was great, and I can't remember, wasn't it Tom who questioned Moraine about the fog?
Yes, it was.
And it seems really strange that Tom would question her.
Right. Well, and they're even going back to Tom's introduction when him and Moraine had their little conversation a couple of chapters ago. Last week, I think, is when we talked about that. Him and Moraine seem to kind of go back and forth at each other. Like, they're not totally comfortable with each other, so.
I think that there's a history there.
There does seem to be something there. I don't disagree with you on that. There's, if not between the two of them, then definitely Tom seems to not trust Aes Sedai.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a big fan of, and nobody seems to, but he seems to for better reasons than the boys, you know? I mean, the boys just don't trust Aes Sedai because they don't trust Aes Sedai because that's how they grew up. Seems like there's a story to Tom not trusting him. So.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and then the other thing was when Moraine was explaining the one power to Egwene, I think the thing of her saying that the source is the river and the Aes Sedai is the water wheel kind of stuck out.
Yeah, I like that. I like that as an idea because Egwene is, and it may be next chapter, and it may be this. I don't remember which one it was. We're talking about the next one anyway, so I can say this without any issues. But when Egwene starts questioning, oh, does that stone have the one power in it? She's like, no, that's not how it works. This is just the one power is, and she goes into the one power is the river. It's not in an object. It is an object, if you will, or it is something. So.
Yeah. So, you know, and I then wonder, is there really like a river? Like, is there a real river? Or something like that.
Interesting. Yeah, like, so is there an actual river that the Aes Sedai are pulling off of?
Yeah.
I like it. I like the question. That's all I'm going to say for now. All right. Anything else stand out to you with chapter 12?
No.
All right. So we are going to move on to chapter 13, titled Choices. So Moraine removes awareness from everyone except for herself because she can't heal herself. Lan brings that up. Lan scouts ahead and spends time teaching the boys the basics about their weapons. Rand and Egwene have an argument centered on her unbraiding her hair and her desire to become an Aes Sedai.
Right.
The boys talk as if their troubles are over, and Moraine reminds them that this is just the beginning and tells them that she will destroy them herself before letting the Dark One have them. Kind of ominous there.
Yes.
Rand sneaks and hides in order to spy on Moraine talking to Egwene. And then as they approach Barillon, Moraine explains that they need to be careful of what they say, not to draw attention to themselves, and explains that her and Lan go by the names of Alice and Andra here. And as they reach the gatekeeper refuses to open up until he sees who it is. He mentions that the White Cloaks are in Barillon and brings up the false dragon that's in Gil'dan.
Yeah.
And I think he names him. I think that's the first time that that dragon's been named. His name is Loghain. And then Tom tells part of the Carathon cycle to Rand, and they discuss the prophecies. And then they reach the Stag and Lion. They meet with Master Fitch, the innkeeper. And that's the end of chapter 13. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think definitely starting to come into her own, and Rand is not liking that he's losing her. I think that's, you know, when she unbound her hair and she's, you know.
Yeah, Egwene seems, out of all the Two Rivers folk here, you know, the kids from Two Rivers, the teens from Two Rivers, seems like Egwene can, like, react to changes better than anybody else. Like, she can just kind of go with the flow and realize that, like, she isn't as freaked out as the others, it seems like, right?
Yeah. And it just seems strange also, you know, with them having different names in the different towns, and it's...
Why would that be? Why would they do that?
You know, they're hiding who they are.
Right.
They're definitely hiding who they are. And the thing that it was talking about, like, the Children of the Light, and I'm not really sure who the Children of the Light were, but it seems like they're against the Aes Sedai.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you more about that and explain, like, the...
Sure, I can go into a little bit. They go into some explanation with that later, but I can do basics. So think of the Children of the Light as like religious fanatics. They hate the One Power. They are all about walk in the light, don't walk in the dark. They hunt down dark friends, whether perceived dark friends, we'll even say. Like, once the Children of the White Cloaks, the Children of the Light, are on you, they're going to arrest you and bring you with them and, you know, like, torture you. And, you know, I mean, they hate the One Power. The One Power to them is a sign of evil. And so they try to, you know, hunt down Aes Sedai. I say try because they're not great at it.
Well, that makes more sense than why Anne and Moraine would change their name.
Right.
Because as the Children of the Light, they probably have their spies out and would know the names of the Aes Sedai, so they would use different names.
That I completely agree. That's kind of where I was trying to lead you to, and you did wonderful in getting there.
But it was really funny how the gatekeeper's, like, you know, just falling over himself for them. So
right, the innkeeper, absolutely.
Held in high esteem there.
Well, Land has this seemingly, like, endless pocket full of gold, and I think that that probably helps.
Probably has something to do with it, yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember there were also wolves howling outside the town, so I was wondering if that mean that Trollocs were around.
That's a good question. That very well might. I never quite put that together, but that does make sense. I mean, after what Lan said the chapter before, that makes a lot of sense. The wolves in general seem to be more active right now than they have been previous to where our story picks up. So, I agree.
So, that was just struck me.
What are your thoughts on, do you have any thoughts on Loghain yet? The false dragon in Ghildan? It seems like everywhere they go, I mean, not that they've gone that far, but that he seems to be what everyone wants to talk about, right?
Right. They're all talking about Loghain. It seems too packed, too easy.
Right. They do mention that Loghain can channel, which is kind of a big deal because guys can't channel.
Right. But didn't they say if guys channel, they go mad?
Right. Absolutely. No, not immediately.
No.
You don't immediately go mad, but, so when, and I think I might have brought this up in the prologue, but if I didn't, I'll say it now. When Luthern and his band of male Aes Sedai sealed up the boar and locked the Forsaken and the Dark One into his prison, he struck back. The Dark One's final strike, he struck back at the actual male side of the
I said,
you know, the one power. And yes, that was the curse, was that anybody who uses the male side will go mad, eventually go mad. That's what the taint is it's the madness of the,
right,
of Sidene. So yes,
right,
eventually you do go mad. We don't know yet whether Loghain actually has gone mad. We just know that he basically picked up an army and was going across this country of Gil-Dan and taking it over and destroying everything in his path. Named himself the Dragon. You know, I guess he didn't technically name himself the Dragon, but he did say that his followers were the people of the Dragon, so it kind of goes without saying, right?
Yeah. And the thing is, this is where I keep getting confused, because I thought the Dragon was the good guy in the original fable.
He was the good guy and the bad guy, right? I mean, he was...
The good guy and the bad guy. So, like, the false dragon and like... This is where I keep forgetting. Like, so the false... Like, there's false dragons that keep, you know, will keep coming up. And I can't remember what the prophecy said about the false dragon, or what the difference between the false dragon and the true dragon is. Like,
so
I think that's
important. How much of the Kuriathon cycle did we get? So when Tom's talking to Rand about the Kuriathon cycle, the prophecies of the dragon, he mentions that there will be signs that the true dragon has come, because there have been false dragons in the world since the dragon's time, but even more so recently. There have been a few of them recently. And he says that the stone will not fall until the Stone of Tyr will not fall until the people of the dragon come. And he also says that the sword that cannot be touched will be taken by the dragon. And Rand wonders how this sword that's inside the stone can be taken without, if the people of the dragon have not taken the stone yet, and if they have taken the stone, then how can that sword be taken? He says it doesn't seem to make sense that both of them can be true. And Tom says, well, if prophecies were easy, then they wouldn't be very prophetic, would they? Like, that's kind of funny. I like the way he puts that. So
I'm glad that I'm not the only one that's confused.
Yes, it at this point in the story, it is definitely confusing. Absolutely. But what you just need to kind of know about Loghain is he has kind of basically said, yeah, I'm the Dragon Reborn, and then the Aes Sedai show up and say, we don't agree. So
right.
And they have a battle. And according to at least some people in Barlan here, he killed all the Aes Sedai, while other ones say that the Aes Sedai killed him, or that they steal them, or they trapped him, or, you know, there's stories all over because that's what happened.
Because there's no telephones.
Exactly. No texting each other about what's happening.
No CNN at night to let them know what's going on.
Right. Exactly. No newspapers even, it seems like. It's just word of mouth.
Exactly.
All right. Anything else with Chapter 13.
Nope.
There was something that popped out. Give me a second here. See if I can... No, maybe not. I'll come back to it if it comes to my head. There was something I wanted to talk about, but I don't remember what it is, so it's not a big deal. Must not be. Alright. Chapter 14, titled The Stag and the Lion. Stag and Lion. Which is the name of the inn they're at. So, Master Fitch leads the group into the inn, and Moraine questions them about the White Cloaks. And they take their baths, you know, they get settled, and then they go and they take nice hot baths. And Matt starts running his mouth, and the others are kind of trying to talk over him, saying, stop trying to be a Gleeman, Matt. You know, Tom tells the stories way better than you do anyway. After their baths, Rand spots a Tom girl talking to Moraine. That's not how she's described, but it's kind of, you know, wearing men's clothes, short hair, you know, you think, kind of a Tom girl. I can't remember if we've named her yet, but that's Min, is her name. So then they eat dinner in a private dining room, which kind of shows, again, that, you know, how important they are to this innkeeper. And Lan discusses the rumors that are going around Barillon, and they decide they're going to stay for a couple of days. Rand goes to his room. Rand goes to his room and has a dream in which Bielsamon tells Rand that the Omerlin seat will use him, and generally just kind of tries to scare Rand. And eventually he breaks a rat's back by simply curving his finger, which is kind of creepy. I think of The Shining, the movie, with the little finger.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Rand goes back to sleep, wondering whether he should tell Moraine about his dream. Your thoughts on chapter 14? Do you already? I like it. Yeah. Yeah. He just doesn't seem to take it quite as seriously as everybody else. It's like, well, yeah, I get it, but you want to talk about Trollocs? Check this out. You know?
And then he starts talking too much and like...
And that says a lot about the Children of the Light as well, is that just by saying that that you know about Trollocs, they automatically think, oh, well, that must be a dark friend that he knows about Trollocs. It doesn't matter to them that their town was attacked by Trollocs and they fought the Trollocs. What matters is, oh, you know about Trollocs. That means that you're associated with Trollocs and you must be a dark friend. So,
yeah.
When I think of the Children of the Light, I think of the witch trials from the 1600s.
Yeah.
You know,
the Puritan ministers.
Exactly. Which is funny because Matt is actually kind of named after a Puritan minister. one of the big ministers from that area in Massachusetts is. Name, it wasn't Cawthon, but it was something similar, so that's where his last name came from, was from that minister, like his last, that's where Jordan pulled his name from. So just small bit of information there. So I find it interesting that they get a private dining room.
Yeah
I mean they get whatever they want, basically. So
yeah, but while they're there, they also find out that the harvest hasn't been good there either.
Right, it's not just the two rivers.
Right, exactly. So it's like more foreshadowing. It's like, hey, it's not just Two River that's doing bad. Everybody else is doing bad. And, you know, Lan doesn't seem to trust anyone, and he wants to wait till the innkeeper leaves, you know, before talking.
Right.
And, they were catching up on the news about, you know, the battle in Gaydon. Is that, you know, that's where they were catching up on all the news of what happened with him and with Loghain and
right.
Gaydon and what was going on and exchanging Heal all the not. News that they heard. So in it seems that Rand is getting, I don't know if the word is itchier or more intrigued by Egwene.
Yeah.
Like she's getting under his skin more. And then the thing with his dream again and coming him, where they name
Bielsamon?
Bielsamon.
Yep.
Now, is that the Dark One's name?
That's a good question.
You know, because he's the one who's you know, they finally have, like, you know, you finally have a name. So I'm like, who is that? And he's, you know, just a pinterest. Haunting rant that he might be the dragon, and that he, you know, he was saying that he may lose Theron, go mad, and just like going all through the, you know, may lose Theron, like split the world,
made him kill his family,
and because of what Rand's dad said, he's wondering whether he can trust to tell the Aes Sedai about his dream,
right?
And if that would help.
Right.
Think, you know, because he's still thinking about what his dad said. You know, you really have to trust, you know, be wary of who you trust. So he's kind of in a quandary over, you know, who to tell about these dreams. But he knows that someone's in his head.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, like it's definitely not just a normal dream. You can definitely tell that.
Yeah.
Bielsamon is described with Eyes of Fire, which
right.
is a bit ominous. So,
I just think that there's war dreams coming Rand's way, and I don't know if, you know, if he will trust the Aes Sedai, or if he'll maybe tell Egwene.
Now, we do get a mention during this chapter of the title of the book. First time we've heard that. He mentions the Eye of the World. Do you think the Eye of the World will serve you?
Yeah.
So, I thought that was interesting. We don't get any more information about it than that, but we do learn that the Eye of the World is something. It's not just the title, you know? So,
I'm wondering if the Eye of
the Stone of Tyr?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's another name.
Interesting. I like it. That's all I'll say.
I don't know if this is a good interesting or a bad interesting.
And that's the way I want it to sound, is that I don't want to give you information that you might learn later. So clearly there's something to that, or else I wouldn't say that. We'll just put it that way.
Well, am I doing okay with, like, how I'm interpreting this?
Oh, you're doing fantastic. If you were way off, I'd steer you back. You're doing fantastic. You pick up on things that I don't think I picked up on. Actually, I know I didn't pick up on my first time reading, but you're also reading slower than I did. You know, I sped through the book, you know, and when you do that, you don't pick up on details that you pick right. up on when you slow down and only read a few chapters at a time.
Yeah. Plus, I have my handy-dandy little cheat sheet where I'm writing little things down.
Exactly. Like, you're taking...
I wonder what this is.
I like it. No, you're doing great. So, anything else on chapter 14?
The only thing I'm wondering is why they're deciding to stay a couple more days, unless it's to gather information.
Or just to rest. You know, I mean, they went flying... into Baerlon, so.
Well, they went hard up. Yeah, that's right. Definitely true. But, they can still mosey along. But then again, I don't know how far the different places are for where they need to go. And maybe they're waiting. Because, that, in my mind, it would give the Drakkar more time to find them.
Right.
If they stay too long in one place.
Oh, I agree. It is definitely dangerous to... just to stop. So
exactly. And plus Matt and his big mouth. Like, I don't know if I would trust Matt.
Oh, he does have a mouth on him.
But a day or two, because he's gonna talk to me and he's gonna chat up pretty girls.
Yeah, finally enough, I don't think this is the last time that Matt's mouth is going to get him into trouble. So
exactly. You know it's freaking coming.
That's awesome. So when Rand sees Moraine talking to the girl, the Tom girl, or the tomboy. Any thoughts on that? Like, because it definitely seems like Moraine knows her, right? This isn't just random talking.
Right. I was kind of wondering if she was in disguise.
Like another Aes Sedai or something along those lines?
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe that's why they decided to stay, because whatever information she passed on.
Okay. I like it.
Because that could be that was the only reason that I could think of them staying. You know, there had to be a reason, and I think that might have been it. Because it doesn't seem smart to stay in one place too long again.
I cannot disagree with you on that. I think that's a good way to look at it.
Those are my thoughts.
Perfect. Do you have any predictions moving forward?
Gonna open up his big mouth and get him into trouble.
Well, that's hardly a prediction, but yes, I like it. Are they going to run into any problems in Baerlon?
I think they are. Yeah, what? I think the with the Children of Light.
Okay, I like that prediction. They've kind of foreshadowed that a little bit by saying that the Children of Light are there. Is it going to be Moraine or Lan getting into trouble, or is it going to be one of the boys, Matt, maybe? Matt's mouth getting himself into trouble.
It's just Matt who's going to get them into trouble. But then I was also wondering, you know, because they were talking more about, and like, this just popped into my head, you know, where they were talking about, like, I don't know, Dayton?
Gildan?
Gildan. Yeah, how far that is away from where they are?
Oh, it is a ways. It is not. They're in the country of Andor, which is where the Two Rivers is, like on the edges of Andor. Like, but they're still in Andor, and Gildan is a whole different country. So, it's nowhere near. It's just the story. You know, I mean, that's just like the news. You know, I mean, imagine there was just an uprising in Syria, not that, you know, just a little while ago where a populist army took over the country. It's kind of that same idea where it's newsworthy and it's in our news, but it's so far away from us that we're not overly concerned about it as Americans. You know, think about it kind of along those lines.
Yeah. I just think that definitely Matt's going to get them into trouble.
And I've been calling Gildan a country. Gildan's a city. The country is Saldea.
Okay.
So, which is on the borderlands, and the borderlands are on the other side of the world, or the other side of the continent, or whatever. You know, I mean, it would be like, if you're looking at it from a United States perspective, they're in South Carolina and working their way west. And Gildan would be more like Utah, you know, or Arizona. You know, not quite California, but on your way to California. So.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I think that's, you know, yeah. And I think we're going to find out more about spies.
Like the Dark One spies?
Yeah.
Yep.
There's going to be a lot more dreams for Rand.
Okay. I like that. So, is Baal-Zamon, is that the Dark One?
That's what I'm wondering.
Do you think it is?
Yeah, I think it might be.
Okay. All right. Try and think of any other questions there might be. It's nice to finally be out of the Two Rivers, huh? To finally get this trip going.
Yeah, and finding out more about the One Power. And, I mean, we're definitely going to be finding out more about the One Power and more about what happened. I mean, that's definitely going to be unfolding. And also, I think what's also going to be unfolding is more about, what did Moraine call it? The pattern.
Yes. I wonder, is that a real thing or is it just her way to not have to explain? You know, because every time, like when they added Egwene, and even to a degree when they added Tom, it was, her answer was, they're part of the pattern. Leave it alone. They're part of the pattern.
I think the pattern is prophecy.
Okay. So.
The pattern is prophecy.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. We, of course, will learn more about the pattern. And I almost said something I should not have said, and I'm glad I caught myself. I think we'll learn more about that in the next couple of weeks. Maybe not next week, it may be the week following. But we'll learn more about the pattern and different things tied to it. So, all right. Anything else with this week's reading? Anything stand out? Any questions that you have? You know what? A little thing here in Rand's dream, Baal-Zamon brings up, he says that the Amarylline seat will use Rand. When Egwene is getting her little training with Moraine, and she does the tiny little flicker, Moraine mentions that she could go far. She could even be the Amarylline seat one day. Do you know what the Amarylline seat is? Because they both mention this Amarylline seat. Do you have any idea of what that is yet?
No, I don't have an idea.
Okay. That's something I think I can bring up, and I'm without spoiling much. The Amarylline seat is the, it's both an object and a person. The leader of the Aes Sedai is the Amarylline seat.
That was what my guess was going to be.
And she sits on the Amarylline seat, so it's both an object and a person. Interestingly enough, back in the prologue with Luz Theron Telamon, he was the Tamerlan seat. They don't have a Tamerlan seat anymore, but he was the highest ranking man among the Aes Sedai at that time. So he was the Tamerlan or Tamerlan seat, however you say that. So the Amerlan seat would be the seat of power among the Aes Sedai.
Wow. So. Okay.
So that's about all I have on that. Oh, I know what I was going to bring up earlier that I forgot. So when Tom is talking to Rand about the Kariathan cycle and the prophecies,
mm-hmm.
he mentions that he mentions the sword and the stone of Tyr. And I just think that's kind of, at this point anyway, Jordan was still going for the Arthurian tales.
Right.
So I find it interesting that you have the sword and the stone.
Yeah. And,
right.
And that the dragon's going to be able to pull it out.
Right. And nobody can touch the sword except for the dragon. And the dragon will be able to wield the sword and the stone. So
right.
Kind of fun there, right? So
definitely.
Yep. So I thought that was interesting. And it's not something I necessarily caught again the first time I was reading it. But you slow down and you read it slower and it's like, huh. The sword and the stone, huh? So
are you also reading these chapters just to refresh your memory?
I am, but I read them a lot quicker. I kind of glance over them. I've read them enough times that basically, I'm reading them to make sure that I know what we're actually talking about, that I'm not jumping ahead beyond what, you know, that I don't start spewing out stuff that I shouldn't be saying. Exactly. No, I try to avoid spoilers, but I've read it several times, so I don't have to, like, do quite as slow of a reading as you, who's reading it for the first time, would need to, so. I start usually right around Thursday. I start reading it and try to just kind of jam the reading into end of the next couple days. So,
yeah, makes sense.
All right,
makes sense.
Well, as we're winding down the show again, I want to mention that we do have a Patreon. Anybody listening, if you could join our Patreon, we'd appreciate that. We will have some bonus episodes there eventually. I am not very good at the editing yet. I'm still working on that. So I will have last week's episode up, hopefully today. I was working on that editing before we came on today. We do have, I didn't do a discussion question. We should have a discussion question. So, I don't have one though. So sorry, since nobody's listening yet, I'm not concerned about it. For those getting caught up, we are going to have a writing contest, assuming we ever have listeners. I do want to keep that going. So the writing contest, as was mentioned in previous episodes, would be a basically creating a side story that goes along with this book, the Eye of the World. There's no spoilers are allowed. You can't talk about what's coming up in future books. You can't bring up characters who have not yet appeared in the Eye of the World. So yeah, get on that. Outside of that, we do have an email if you want to reach out to us. That email is adventuresinrandland@gmail.com. So you can reach out to us there. If you do listen on iTunes or Spotify or however you listen to us, please do rate us, give us reviews. That seems to help, I guess, according to other podcasts I've listened to. I don't know for sure. This is the first time I've ever done something like that. So yeah, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week. Next week, we are reading chapters 15 through, I want to say 19, but give me a minute. Let me pull up my little schedule.
Yep, it's 15 through 19.
Yeah, so is that disappointing to you that you only get 5 chapters? They are slightly longer chapters, or else there'd be 6.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
We'll do 6 the week after. Hey, in a few weeks, you're only doing 4 chapters, so I know, right? All right, well, I will talk to you next week, Wendy. I will talk at all of you next week. We will discuss chapters 15 through 19.
All righty. You have a great rest of your weekend.
You do as well. I will.
Okay.
All right.
See you Monday.
Absolutely. That we will. Bye.
Bye.